Welcome to the Pharmacy Quality Solutions Quality Corner Show, where we talk quality of healthcare and explore what that actually means. Let's dig into performance measurements, the Equip platform, pharmacy goals, and personal goals. We will also occasionally cover topical healthcare news and maybe throw into the conversation a few of our own nerdy passions and hobbies. So turn us up. The Quality Corner Show starts now.
Hello, Quality Corner Show listeners. This is your host, Nick Dorich, and we welcome you to episode 46 of the Quality Corner Show. This episode will be airing in the beginning of October 2020. So what's significant about October? There's lots of things. We have daylight savings, we have Halloween, which is one of my personal favorite holidays, and in pharmacies, there's lots of flu shots being administered. But that's not all about pharmacy for October. If you don't already know, October is American Pharmacist Month. It's a great time of the year to recognize the work of the pharmacy profession and to highlight how pharmacists contribute to the health outcomes of the patients and the communities that they serve. While this originally started as a recognition for the pharmacist, there has also been expansion to celebrate pharmacy technicians, student pharmacists, and others that are contributing to the success of pharmacy. Anyways, to celebrate American Pharmacist Month, we've invited a special guest for today's podcast. I'm happy to introduce the current president of the American Pharmacist Association, Michael Hoag. Michael, welcome to the Quality Corner Show.
Thanks, Nick. I appreciate you having me. It's an exciting time to celebrate our profession, and it's going to be great to get to talk with you and your listeners today.
Excellent. Michael, I feel very honored to have you here today. We talk about pharmacy being the quote-unquote face of healthcare, and some actually might consider you the current, most contemporary face of pharmacy based on your current role, at least for the time being. Before we get into our conversation and questions for today, I'd like our audience to know a little bit more about you. So while I already did introduce you as the president of the American Pharmacist Association, you do also have a day job, Michael. So do you mind providing us a little bit about your background, your career, and your work in pharmacy?
Sure. I'm currently serving as the dean and a professor of pharmacy at Loma Linda University in Loma Linda, California. I'm also the director for the Center for Interprofessional Education and Practice at Loma Linda for our entire medical campus. Head up all of our IPE activities. My background and history is a little unusual for a dean in that I used to be an independent pharmacy owner and have that experience in a small community in Alabama. I'm married to a pharmacist, and I've worked most of my career actually in ambulatory care practices, mostly in family medicine clinics, both in employer-based model family medicine clinics with an HMO. And then later on, I worked in the Jefferson County, Alabama Department of Public Health in safety net clinics, providing care to the underserved in ambulatory care. So very much I'm an outpatient practitioner, but as you know, Loma Linda is a huge, huge medical system with six hospitals and 60 outpatient clinics. So I guess if I had to classify myself beyond academic pharmacy, it would be health system pharmacy.
Got it. While you didn't mention it there, I also know from my experience working with you that you are a big advocate for improving immunizations or a percentage of immunizations that can be administered to patients, and that you're a big advocate for pharmacists working with those immunization opportunities. So for your benefit, letting you know, just yesterday, I got my flu shot for this year done by my local community pharmacist as well, because I'm not going to have it done any other way if it's up to me. We're going to go ahead and get started with today's questions for the podcast. And we're going to talk about something, get us started that you and I are both very passionate about, and that's pharmacists. So we're going to start with just what is the significance of American Pharmacist Month? I gave a little bit of an introduction behind it, but would like to hear from you and in your position. What's the message behind American Pharmacist Month, and how does APHA support this engagement to promote pharmacy?
Well, APHA created American Pharmacist Month decades ago as a way to try to raise public awareness of the role of the pharmacist on the healthcare team. And, you know, we've tried different themes over the year to try to call attention in the general public to the role of the pharmacist. Know Your Medicine, Know Your Pharmacist is probably a moniker that you've heard many, many times. That's one that we've used for years to try to help patients understand that knowing the name of their pharmacist is just as critical as knowing the name of their physician, because the pharmacist has just as much impact and can have on the outcomes of the patient. So I think the real thing I would say, Nick, is that we're trying to really help pharmacists' visibility and try to help the public see the pharmacist as more than just a purveyor of pills, but as a care provider who's essential, as an essential member of the healthcare team. And American Pharmacist Month gives us the opportunity to really celebrate pharmacists and pharmacy technicians and student pharmacists and the great work that they're doing to advance patient care.
This really goes along with just the general mission for APHA, promoting the role of the pharmacist, expanding role of the pharmacist, and even just the pharmacy team. So that, I think, goes into some of the advocacy efforts as well related to getting pharmacist provider status and being paid for other services. So does that American Pharmacist Month, as you said, created by APHA, but those all seem to be in parallel tracks where it's all towards one goal, realizing the true value of the pharmacist. Is that correct?
Right. I mean, the reality is, Nick, that our payment system is broken. And I just don't know any other way to say it. Very simply, our payment system is broken. The way that pharmacists are incentivized and paid today is based on an antiquated system of volume and moving prescriptions through the system, whether it's hospital-based system or a community-based system, has proven to be not for perhaps the most effective way of incentivizing pharmacists to be able to produce a positive outcome. And, you know, pharmacists are so well trained. In fact, if you look at the education and training of all healthcare professionals across the continuum of care, pharmacists have the second highest degree of clinical training of all of the health professions, only right behind physicians. And that's a pretty remarkable thing. But our healthcare system is not rewarding pharmacists or compensating pharmacists for the things that they're doing. The system right now is just paying for prescription drugs. And so what we're trying to do is shift that, because pharmacists are frustrated. You know, if you talk to a community pharmacist today, they're not happy. They're very, very disenfranchised and frustrated because their hours have been cut. Their staffing levels have been cut. In fact, there are fewer jobs in pharmacy today. It's a real frustrating point. And the way we turn this around is that we do everything we can to change the payment system. Fair reimbursement for product by eliminating PBM spread and getting discounts directly to patients so that pharmacies don't lose money every time they fill a prescription is number one. And number two is getting pharmacists paid under the medical benefit for the clinical care services they provide, equivalent to any other healthcare professional. If we can change the payment system, we can change the trajectory of this profession. And I think that's really key for APHA and the other pharmacy associations to focus on.
Michael, that's great. Thank you for the information and perspective there. I want to transition us. So for a membership association like APHA, it's driven and it works because people are members. People are active with the group, right? And you already kind of referenced it. Pharmacists may feel disenfranchised or may not feel like they have a home or opportunity. So do you mind giving me your elevator speech or your quick pitch? What's the importance of being engaged with an association? And I'll add here, because while you're president of APHA, there's a lot of different places where people can be contributing to the success in operations, the advocacy for pharmacy. So there may be other associations. Something I know both you and I are passionate about as well is state-based pharmacy associations. So whether it's APHA or other organizations, what's your rationale behind why pharmacists, you know, they need to be active at their day job, they need to do their job, but they also need to be involved with these associations?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I think that pharmacy schools oftentimes have done a tremendous disservice to our profession by not helping students understand while they're enrolled in pharmacy school the critical reasons for why they need to be a part of a profession. When we entered the pharmacy profession, we entered something that's bigger than ourselves. We became a part of something that has a purpose and a call that's much larger than us as individuals. unfortunately, what's happened over time, and it's partly a societal problem and not just a problem in pharmacy, is that we've become very self-centric. We've become very, you know, what's in it for me oriented. And really, we think about ourselves and our own personal gain and our own personal, I mean, it's natural, it's human nature that we would focus on our own finances and our own personal gain. That's true, and I understand that. We get so caught up sometimes, I think, in the personal wins, however, that we forget about that professional obligation, that we're a part of something bigger than ourselves. You know, APHA and other national associations are working in Washington and in state houses day in and day out and fighting for pharmacy. They're going to do that day in and day out. They're going to fight. And they're going to fight for you, whether you pay your dues or not. And, you know, I personally think that there is a professional obligation. And people may say, well, yeah, but APHA didn't do this anything for me. And my working conditions are terrible. And how do I fix this? And I get it. I understand the frustrations. But you have to realize that if we all would come together and work together through our professional associations, we can address these issues. Sitting on our hands and complaining about how bad things are really does not solve the problem. And I'm saying this as a former community pharmacy owner. I understand. I really do. I've worked in chain drugstores. I get it. I totally do understand. I have a number of actively practicing pharmacists that work for me. We own a pharmacy at the pharmacy school. I get it. I totally understand. The issue here is that we're a part of something bigger than ourselves. Only 40% of pharmacists nationwide are a member of any association. That includes state or national. That means 60% of the people in our profession are completely unplugged and disengaged. So maybe you don't have time to go to a meeting, and maybe you don't have time to contribute to a committee. That's fine. At least pay your dues. Let the associations know that you're there and that you do care about your profession's future, and support them by just at least paying your dues and being a member of something that's just bigger than you, your profession. And that's really important. So, and of course, Nick, you mentioned state associations, so I can't just let that slide by. State associations are the lifeblood of pharmacy at the local level. My personal opinion is that every pharmacist should be a member of their state pharmacy association at a bare minimum, and a member of APHA as the National Professional Society of Pharmacists. And then as you specialize and you have other interests in the profession, by all means, join those associations that are going to give you the focus in your specialty area that you desire. But by all means, do not pass up your state association. It's so critical.
Thanks, Michael. So I don't know how much TV you watch, because it sounds like you're a very, very busy person, Michael. But one of my favorite shows is the, I guess, reality TV show Bar Rescue. You know the concept for the show? There's failing bars, businesses. Guy comes in and tells them what they need to do to change their business model. But the intro for that show has one line that I think is really important. And it's the host of the show says that he doesn't embrace problems. He embraces solutions. And that's something that I really love. And in many of my conversations, while it, yes, does come from a reality TV show, I think it's an important lesson. And if you're someone, if you're a pharmacist or even outside of pharmacy, if you're noting that there are problems or that there are issues that need to be fixed, it's not enough to just raise your hand and say that there's a problem. You need to be part of the active solution to address that. And I think that's where work with the association, you know, having just one person identify a problem or present it doesn't do enough. Our voices are stronger when we're together, and that's the strength that becomes part of the association. And going back to being a pharmacist, Michael, you did a great job explaining some of that information. In a prior episode of the show, we talked about, with Zach Renfro, one of my colleagues here at PQS, we talked about the oath of the pharmacist and how that applies to quality improvement in healthcare. And one of the components of the oath of the pharmacist, and I'm going to read it off directly here, I will embrace and advocate changes that improve patient care. So, you know, from that part of it, as I look at advocacy efforts, whether it be with your patients, with your legislators, with other healthcare providers, every pharmacist, you've already committed to that. It's a, that you already have your call of action. Let's put that into motion. Let's be active with those associations. So, Michael, I'm going to move us to our third question, if that's okay with you now. And final question, as far as our primary content here, something that I'm sure you talk about every day when you're chatting with your students or with your other faculty members or with the board of APHA, I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball. We're, you know, getting into October and Halloween season with the witches and warlocks. So maybe it's a costume design element that's there. I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball, Mike. What's the future for the pharmacy profession look like as pharmacies are getting more engagement with payers, with patients, and with employers? You noted that in an earlier comment, more direct opportunity with employers and other groups to improve patient care. Maybe it's 20 years from now, maybe it's 50 years from now, but what do you see as the profession of pharmacy and why should that get people excited?
Well, that is an awesome question because I think the future, I gave a talk at University of Mississippi to their Phi Lambda Sigma chapter and leadership opportunities a couple weeks ago. And the title of my talk was Pharmacy, Our Brightest Days Are Yet to Come. And I really do believe that. And I'll tell you why I believe that. So let me give you some evidence. So it's one thing for, you know, you'd expect a guy in my leadership position to give you a motivational speech about why pharmacy is great. But I have some reasons why I believe that pharmacy has an incredibly bright future and that we're headed in the right direction. Here's why. Number one. State legislatures and governors are, because of the pandemic, beginning to, for the first time ever, truly understand at a deep level how vital and critical pharmacists are in local communities. We've been telling that message for years, and we've been working with state legislatures to try to help them understand how critical pharmacists are as healthcare providers. But the pandemic, while it's been horrible, has been a blessing to the profession of pharmacy because we now have recognition at in almost all 50 states now of the vital role of pharmacists as providers. Now, in some cases, this has been through temporary rule. My prediction is that most of these changes that have happened in pharmacy practice regulation at the state level will probably be made permanent by those states. We really believe that's true. And I think that gives me hope because what it means is that we will have used this opportunity for good, for the betterment of patient care. Number two, communities are recognizing that business as usual with pharmacy isn't working. And because, and I tell you what I mean by this, that business as usual isn't working. We're seeing pharmacies close at a pretty rapid rate over the last 4 or 5 years, and especially in the last 18 months. The number of pharmacies, community pharmacies, that have closed has accelerated. In many states, and some states have really done in-depth analysis about this, the pharmacies that are closing are pharmacies that are in underserved areas with underserved communities. And we have a health crisis right now in minority communities with access to care. We know that many African-American patients, Native American patients, and Hispanic patients do not have equal access to care. And that is unjust. It's not right. And for every pharmacy in those communities that close because our reimbursement system is screwed up, we're further worsening access to care. Well, people are beginning to wake up and say, look, keeping pharmacies open and having fair reimbursement policies so that pharmacists can be the care provider in these communities is the right thing to do. It's the ethical thing to do. And so people are beginning to understand that addressing health disparities and providing care to people who are underserved is so important. And the pharmacist has a critical role to play in that. That means that at a societal level, people are beginning to understand the real value of a pharmacist. And I think that's pretty cool. Number three, physicians have firmly recognize that having a pharmacist on the team improves their efficiency and improves their quality metrics. And so since this is PQS, I can speak to quality, of course, and talk about that. But yeah, I mean, I don't have any physicians within our health system that wouldn't just absolutely love to have a pharmacist on their team. In fact, I have physician groups coming to me on a regular basis saying, hey, can you put a pharmacist on our team? And I say, yes, but not for free. We have to come up with a model that compensates the pharmacist for the excellent care they provide. So what's happening now is physicians are beginning to advocate on behalf of pharmacists for provider status. Now, granted, it's obvious that organized medicine is not 100% behind that, but generally speaking, in local communities, physicians are advocating for it because they want the services and the help and the assistance and the partnership of a pharmacist to help solve medication problems. So three critical players that in the past were not convinced that pharmacists were critical. You've got legislators and regulators acknowledging through real action during the pandemic, and they want to make those things permanent. You've got consumers and patients who understand that pharmacists provide critical access to care, especially in underserved communities. And you've got physicians who are beginning to demand that they have pharmacists on the healthcare team. And because of all of those things, we've got all the people outside of our profession singing from the same hymnal that we've been singing from for 20, 30 years. That is, to me, a tipping point that's coming. And the question is, pharmacists, will you tie a knot in the rope and hang on? Because once we come over the tip of the mountain, it's going to be pretty sweet. Henry Ford once said that an airplane never took off going with the wind. It always goes against the wind. And in order to reach that point of force where you actually get off the ground, the pressure is pretty intense. Well, that's where we're at with our profession. We have an intense pressure that we're flying against right now. But if we'll keep moving and keep accelerating with what we're doing, we'll get lift. And we'll get up off of the ground and we'll be able to soar, and our profession will be able to do what it's intended to do and be what we have hoped it would be for the last 30 years.
Yeah, Michael, that last point's really important. The closer you are to the finish line, the higher the pressure. And I know for myself, I'm a runner. So pre-COVID times when I could do a 5K or a 10K race, everybody picks up the pace when they see the finish line that's there. And as you mentioned, there are some that for pharmacy and for changes that are there may not be fully on board. And the closer that we are to seeing those changes, the more the pressure ramps up. So it behooves us to have everybody pushing through to the end. Just because we're close and just because it's more common doesn't mean we let up on the pressure. It means we actually put more on to get these more pressure on to have these changes really activated. I'd further expand actually your point. You talked about pharmacy being engaged in different roles in physician's office with medical practices. As pharmacy starts to branch out and as pharmacy starts to see these expanded opportunities, that means more people are starting to realize the value of a pharmacist. And that may be in ways of direct patient care, but as pharmacists are being involved with technology companies, with different, whether it be other things like maybe immunization registries, as they're being involved more with health plan design, all these different elements, we're getting pharmacists into new roles, and people are seeing how pharmacists, while we are the medication expert, that doesn't just mean the hands-on patient care approach. We're bringing a unique mindset and a unique clinical set of information that's there. So the more we get the pharmacist involved with different aspects of healthcare, the more beneficial it is. We're not trying to replace roles of other healthcare practitioners. We're trying to augment or complement those other opportunities in healthcare for the benefit of patient care. And that's something everybody should be on board with.
Well, that's right. I totally agree with you. It's a great moment in our profession. And you know, the pharmacist workforce study that's done every 5 years, commissioned every 5 years, was just released this last January. And it shows that there's definitely a shift beginning to happen in the places where pharmacists are working and engaged in the healthcare system. In fact, I think this last 5 year survey shows that the biggest shift that's occurred in probably since the survey's been done occurred over the last 5 year period of time with pharmacists areas of employment. So it's exciting. You can name your own future if you can be creative enough to see how your clinical skills and your training fit into the system. Don't be lulled to sleep by thinking that the only place that you can contribute is through the traditional models that have been out there for many years. You can reinvent yourself, and it is possible to do it. And there are a lot of people that are doing it very successfully.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, you've got a lot of important things that you need to be doing to help push the profession of pharmacy forward. So I don't want to take up too much of your time. We'll have a final couple of quick questions for you. We talked about the importance of being engaged and active with professional associations. So whether it's APHA or others, if there's someone here listening to this today and is invigorated by your words, and this is something that's going to make them say, this is going to make me sign up for APHA or another association, where should people go? Where do you recommend they get started? Because you can always go and sign up. But there's being a member and then there's being an active member. After people sign up, what's the next thing that they should do to find out how they can actively be contributing to an association?
Well, the best way to get plugged in at APHA is on our website is pharmacist.com. And the way that we're structured is we have special interest groups. So they span a wide range of subject interest areas across the profession. And I know that actually the equivalent to this structure back 30 years ago when I got involved in pharmacy was exactly how I got plugged in. I found an interest group with operating within APHA. I got plugged into that, started sharing and exchanging information. I volunteered for a committee, working on a committee with that special interest group, and it just went from there. I mean, I've been very involved in the association all over the years, but I wasn't always as involved as I am right this moment. I mean, families and you got things to do, and I understand that. So, you know, just find the level of engagement. Sometimes it's just getting information and plugging into people who are thinking like you and who are in the practice areas that you're in. But I think those special interest groups are really the way to do it. APHA has a good structure around that, that they're expanding and building. So that's the way I would do it. I'd say other associations that you might get involved with professionally may have similar structures or similar things. And those are always great ways, and you can kind of get an understanding of culture of the organization and how to get plugged in. But then there's also all the more advanced activities that you can get involved in as well. I mean, APHA has a 15-member board of trustees. There are opportunities to run for those offices. The election cycle is actually open and running. I think by the time your listeners get this, we'll have just basically completed the nominations process, but there'll be ballots coming out soon, and members will want to vote on who's going to represent them in the profession, and we need a diverse group of pharmacists in every sense of that word. We need people, we need gender diversity, we need ethnic diversity, we need practice site diversity. APHA is a big tent, and we have a lot of pharmacists from a lot of pharmacy practice areas, and we need all of them involved so that your voice is heard and so that that you're represented around the table.
Excellent. Thank you, Michael. Final question. Somebody wants to hear from you. Where can they find you? Do you have a preferred way of contact if anybody wants to? I know that they can find you from the pharmacist.com website and the great Thursday webinars you've been doing, but do you mind explaining where people can find you?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I'm happy to receive email outreach from anyone about anything. Happy to chat about anything you're interested in. My email is mhogue, M-H-O-G-U-E, at llu.edu. That's mhogue at llu.edu. And you're welcome to email me at any time. I'm always happy to respond. If I don't respond immediately, give me just a few days to respond. Sometimes I'm on right now with COVID. I've not been traveling as much, but I do have a lot of international travel responsibilities with the university because we have sister institutions in Asia. So I travel back and forth. So just be patient, but I will get back with you, I promise. And we'll be happy to plug you in and help with anything that you've got on your mind and get some interest and insights from you.
Great. We've now finally covered our discussion for today. And I would again, for the final time, like to thank Michael for your participation in today's podcast. There is no better place and there is no better time to be involved with pharmacy and to be a pharmacy advocate. So if you're a pharmacist that's been involved and been engaged for years, or whether you're someone that's trying to figure out how to do it, come and join us. Become active with your association, whether it's APHA, whether it's another association, or whether it's your state association. Michael, you and I are big advocates for that local level engagement as well. We want your voices to be there. This is all about improvement for patient care, and we can do that through activation of pharmacy. So, Michael, again, thank you for today's participation. Thank you for your leadership for the pharmacy profession. We'd love to have you back, but we know as well that you're a busy guy here and that you'll be busy throughout October celebrating American Pharmacist Month. So we appreciate you for that. With that, we're going to close for today. And we do appreciate you, as always, listening to the Quality Corner Show. And we do have one final message from the PQS team. Our team here at PQS has a couple of favors to ask of you, our podcast listener. First, we encourage you to share this podcast with two friends, because if you share this with two friends and each of them shares it with two friends, it really helps us hit a larger listening audience. Second, we also want to take a moment to remind you to subscribe to the podcast wherever you may find it. And then, if you have any questions or topics you would like us to address, please contact us. The best way to do so is to email info@pharmacyquality.com. Let us know what is on your mind and what we can address so that you are fully informed. Our goal is to continuously improve our podcast content and to provide meaningful information to our listeners based on current topics in healthcare, technology, and quality measurement. We want to help you become as effective as possible in how you care for patients and improve public health outcomes. So until next time, we wish you well.